Hello, everyone, and welcome to Full Time, where we take you around the world of soccer, locally, regionally, nationally, and internationally. Full Time is presented by the Game Sports Podcast and powered by 91 Network. You are listening to Season 4, Episode 13 of Full Time. I am your host, Daniel Scarpino, and with me is our co-host, Gaetano Gallo. Before we begin today's show, Full Time is sponsored by Little Caesars Pizza. With their two locations in Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, you can download and access the Pizza Portal app so you can enjoy a delicious hot and ready pizza from Little Caesars today. Remind our listeners that recordings of Full Time occur weekly or bi-weekly, and uploads to all of our platforms for public viewing and listening occur weekly or bi-weekly as well. Folks, it is nothing short of a pleasure to welcome you back here to Full Time, where we get to talk about the world of soccer. G, my guy, how goes it?
I'm doing pretty well, Scarps. It's a beautiful day out. It's nice early in the morning. Perfect way to start the day. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well as well. And yes, beautiful weather outside. Enjoying the tail end of my March break holiday here. So all is good in my neck of the woods. And in today's show, we will talk about Europe's Big Five, the Champions League, the MLS, the FA Cup, and Euro 2024 playoff qualifiers. As always, if anyone would like to listen to our previous content, please check us out at Full Time on the Game Sports Podcast and 91 Network. And without further ado, Gaetano, and to everyone who has taken the time to tune in here today, let's kick off. We begin today's show by diving straight into Europe's Big Five, and we'll get the conversation rolling with the best title race in Europe, and that is in the English Premier League. The three-horse race for the title continues to fascinate us all. Right now, it's Arsenal and Liverpool who are joint top with 64 points each. Arsenal only edge Liverpool on goal difference at this moment in time. Man City trail just behind those two teams by a single point. And that's the difference at this moment in time. They have 63 points of their own. So everything's just separated by one point. Aston Villa continue to hold down fourth with 55 points. On their heels is Tottenham with 53 points, and Tottenham still have a game in hand. Gaetano, I don't remember in my lifetime, at least, unless if I'm missing something, but you know, having three teams coming this close into the final 10 games of the season, all battling for the title. How thrilling has this been between these three remarkable teams?
Yeah, I think the only one I can think of, and it didn't even last like the full 10 games, but I think it was 13-14. It was Chelsea, Liverpool, and City. The Gerrard slip.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I think, but even then, like by the time it got to the Gerrard slip, it was already like basically over at that point. It was the two-horse race. But yeah, so it's been a long time since we've seen a title race this tightly contested between three teams, and it's just been incredible to watch.
100%. And I mean, you've been there more times than me in terms of winning Premier Leagues as a City fan. But for me, I can almost see, like right now, I'm actually quite relaxed because, I mean, things are going, you know, pretty well for the most part, being an Arsenal fan. But I can see in the, maybe if it stays this close in the last five games of the season, it's just going to be pure nerves. And not looking forward to the football, not looking forward to the nerves. So this title race, we're going to keep everyone updated. There is a little bit of a brief pause right now because of FA Cup action coming up and then international break. But Easter weekend, everything resumes. And then from that point forward, it's just, you know, basically foot on the gas for the Premier League. So it's going to be awesome moving forward. And do you think that we can anticipate any slip-ups, G, in these final 10 games from any of those three teams that we just mentioned, Arsenal, Liverpool, or City?
Well, I mean, the next Premier League game for both of our teams is against each other. So not that it's going to be, you know, in quotations, a slip-up. But, you know, if Arsenal get a good result, that's detrimental to City and vice versa. So yeah, I wouldn't call it a slip up. It's not like, you know, going to like Luton and losing there. Like that would be a slip up, but I definitely see some changes and some discomfort for all three of those teams over these next 10 games.
Would agree. And I mean, City's done it down the years where they can reel off double digit wins in succession. Do I see any of those three teams winning all 10 of their last games? To be perfectly honest, no. I think even if one team goes undefeated in those last 10 games, they're going to pick up a draw or two somewhere along the way. I don't think it'll be a perfect 30 points for any of them. So yeah, it's going to be awesome to see what happens down the stretch. And like you said, March 31st, big one between Arsenal and City. Can't wait. And taking a look at the bottom, it remains Sheffield, Burnley, and Luton Town. Gee, Luton Town had a brilliant opportunity to get out of the bottom three midweek against Bournemouth when they found themselves up 3-0 against the Cherries, but then they ended up losing 4-3. I got to watch that game because I am on holiday, and I was just, I don't know, Luton let one slip away there. And at the bottom, we've also got 10 games to go, just as we said with the top. And what are any of these teams at the bottom going to have to do to get themselves out of the trouble that they're in? Probably Luton has the best chance, you'd have to think.
I mean, if we're going to be realistic, like, they're going to hope that Everton get another points deduction. Like, that's basically about it for them. I don't see any of these three teams being able to pull this off at this point of the season. It's just too far gone.
Yeah, and the only thing that, and I'm sort of with you there, when I saw midweek that they were, Luton were up 3-0 when I was watching that game, I thought, okay, maybe it's going to be Nottingham Forest now that get pulled in. But then when they just let it slip away, they basically gifted it to Bournemouth, and Bournemouth actually should have scored more. I thought to myself, they're just not ready for this. They're just not up for this. But yeah, it's going to take some, I don't want to say miracle, but it's going to be close to a miracle for those three teams to get out of the bottom. And like you said, something else that would have to happen for someone else to drop in. Over in Italy, Serie A, our eyes are not deceiving us. It's Inter Milan who have opened up a 16-point gap at the top of the table. They have 75 points with 10 games remaining. Their record is 24 wins, 3 draws, and just 1 loss. Battling for the remaining European places are AC Milan, Juventus, Bologna, Roma, Atalanta, Napoli, Fiorentina, and Lazio. Gee, it'll pretty much be a focus on who gets the remaining European positions, but Inter Milan have been absolutely sensational this season, and I think it's important that we talk about their dominance, because many people didn't expect this, even with me when I picked them to win the league in the summertime. I didn't foresee this level of quality from them. Let us know what you think about Inter right now.
Yeah, I think I can like finally like firmly say like I was fully wrong about them. Like, you know, I kind of gave you shit for picking them after they sold a lot of players in the summer. They sold, you know, almost like an entire spine of a team, goalkeeper, 2 center backs, 2 central midfielders. Like, I really did not expect this from them. I didn't think their business over the summer was, you know, transformative. I thought it was all right. It was nothing crazy. But I really thought that they would see a dip in quality, and instead they've just cranked it up to another level. I don't want to say it's going to be like right back to the Juve days where Juve would just run the league for like a decade straight. I don't see Inter doing that. But like, I kind of look around the rest of Serie A and I'm like, if Inter kind of keeps the same squad next year, adds 1 or 2 players, like, who's going to challenge them again? Like, they are phenomenal.
Yeah, they, and again, my whole thing was that I thought that they would figure things out tactically, and say they would sort of revolve around the manager's ideas, and they certainly have done that. We're going to talk about what they've done in the Champions League here shortly, but yeah, domestically they've been sensational, and they'll have an opportunity to, you know, in those last 10 or so games to even break 100 points, and what a season that would be for them again when not too many people expected it. Out in Spain's La Liga, after a few recent slip-ups, Girona have dropped back dropped out of first place again, and it's Real Madrid who now hold top spot by 7 points. Madrid is on 69 points, Girona is on 62 points, and Barcelona has more than crept into the conversation now, having 61 points of their own. It's Atletico Madrid and Athletic Club battling for 4th place. Gee, is Girona's lack of experience letting them down here in the later stage of the season?
Yeah, I think the occasion's just a little too much for them. Which is super disappointing, because, you know, we all wanted the fairy tale Leicester story out in Spain. But yeah, I think that, yeah, they're a little just ahead of where they need to be. And yeah, I think it'll bode well for them, like, you know, next season. Obviously, they bring in some new players and lose a couple of players. But like, I think if they can take kind of the core of this team into next season, they will, I'm not going to say they're going to challenge for the title, but they should at least be kind of in the top half, challenging for at least Europe.
Yeah, and again, they will be in European football to some degree next year. You'd think probably the Champions League for sure. So yeah, next season, at least they put one foot forward in front of the other, and that definitely bodes well for them. But to your point, yeah, the occasion probably is a little bit too big for them, but the fairy tale would have been so cool. And, you know, I think it's important to ask, because it's not over for Girona yet. Obviously, they're only seven points out of it. We know anything can happen in football, but do you think that it's time that we start saying that Barcelona has a legitimate chance to challenge for the title?
If they weren't so like patchy and like in and out of form, I would say so. But they're just kind of, and I, not to disrespect them, but they're kind of just on a little bit of a good patch of form here, a little purple patch. I think you look over the course of the season, they've not really been able to, you know, hold that up for any length of time. So I would be very doubtful of them being able to mount any sort of challenge here.
Yeah, and I think too, I think in time it will just be Real Madrid's, like we predicted in the summer, for them to kind of, not say run away with, but kind of win somewhat comfortably. But Barcelona's still in with a shot in Europe. We're going to talk about that shortly. So things are definitely not all doom and gloom for Barcelona. But like you said, they're going to have to hit that proper run of form at the right time. The Bundesliga in Germany is about one team and one team only, and that, of course, is Bayer Leverkusen. They have 67 points and still remain undefeated with their 21 wins, 4 draws, and, of course, 0 losses. There remains only 9 games in the Bundesliga season, so a little bit less than the previous leagues that we just talked about. In second place is Bayern Munich with 57 points. Stuttgart is third with 53 points. Dortmund and Leipzig continue to battle for fourth place. Gee, with each game that passes, it just becomes more real that Bayer Leverkusen will win the title, and perhaps in a fashion that we have never seen in the history of top-flight German football. A quick fact here for everyone listening. No team has ever gone through an entire Bundesliga campaign unbeaten. Bayern Munich did come the closest back in 1986-87 and in 2012-2013 when they only lost one game in each of those seasons. Gee, your thoughts on Leverkusen?
I mean, like you said, every game is just, you know, a step closer to history. You know, I've said this like for the past 6 or 7 episodes, like I've run out of ways to describe them. They're just like, they're not just grinding out, you know, hard fought 1-0s. They are playing some of the best football on the continent. They're just ridiculous. I think like this is the type of season that's going to go down in like history. Like you're going to remember this in 20, 30 years, that time that Bayer Leverkusen, knock on wood, went undefeated and won the Bundesliga, you know, especially in a summer where Bayern Munich spent 100 mil on Harry Kane. To do this is just incredible.
It is incredible. And again, they still have European dreams as well in the Europa League. I mean, could you imagine a final of Liverpool versus Bayer Leverkusen? Could you? That would just be, you want to talk about history, that'd be adding just piles upon piles of history to what's already possibly going to be. So yeah, it's incredible what Leverkusen are doing. We have to continue to highlight them because they might just be the most exciting team in Europe, one with the way that they play and obviously with the results that they've been producing. In France's Ligue 1, PSG hold a 10-point gap at the top despite having drawn their last 3 games. They have 56 points. Brest is trying to close the gap as they currently sit on 46 points. Monaco has 45 points in third. I have to say this, and this is something that ultimately upsets me about Ligue 1, because if you were to compare, let's say, the Premier League, right, we just talked about it, if a team that was competing for the title, even the top 4, only claimed 3 points out of their last 9, they would be overtaken by somebody else, and they'd be out of that conversation. I don't think that's up for debate. But in this league, in France, you can still remain top with a 10-point gap or more when you drop your last 3 games and only get 3 points out of 9. In my opinion, I think it's ridiculous, but I want to know your thoughts on it, because not that I'm sick and tired of talking about Ligue 1 because they're a part of Europe's Big 5, but it does frustrate me a bit.
Yeah, no, I fully agree with you. And, you know, unless it's, you know, like City when they went on their Centurion season and, like, you know, they were miles ahead. Like, but that's the thing in the Premier League, like, that never happens. That right. happened kind of once. It was amazing. I'm sure it maybe wasn't amazing for fans of the other 19 teams in the league. It was pretty amazing for City fans. But, like, it just kind of happened once and then, like, that's it. But it feels like this is the same story we talk about every year in France, you know, outside of when Monaco and Lille won in the last couple of years. But it's just like, yeah, it gets to March and PSG are just done with the title. It's wrapped up. Like, they could be awful for their last, you know, 10 games here and still probably win it pretty comfortably. Yeah, it's a little frustrating. The issue is there's no real way to fix it.
Right.
You know, obviously, because you don't want to be like, oh, PSG can't spend money on players, because that's not a solution. And you also can't force the owners of the other 19 teams to spend more money on players. So it's just kind of this weird lull of owners not wanting to spend money because PSG are just going to win the title every year, and then PSG winning the title every year because the other owners just aren't spending money on players. So Yeah, it's a weird catch 22, and there's no real, you know, fix for it. But yeah, it's definitely frustrating.
Yeah, and the only thing that I would say to fix it is that everyone just stop watching Ligue 1 and everyone tune into the Belgium top flight. Yeah, you know,
Portuguese, yeah. Flight,
you know, that way that the viewership and the numbers can be there, and then they can be involved in Europe's Big Five. But yeah, I hate to see that the same, not even necessarily that the same team wins over and over, because we saw it, like you said, for the better part of a decade, Juventus was running Serie A. But I still loved watching Serie A. The games were quality and teams were competitive. But in Ligue 1, I don't really bother to watch it because it's not competitive. So I would love to see a change up there one way or another. And again, I don't have the answers, but fingers crossed, in due time, either money is spent or somebody else comes into the conversation. Gee, let's move things over to the Champions League. The round of 16 just concluded, and we are now getting ourselves prepped and ready for the quarterfinals, which are imminent. What were your thoughts, G, on the round of 16 overall in the Champions League?
It's funny. There was a lot of talk on Twitter X or whatever you want to call it now, that the Champions League was kind of like washed this year. Those quarterfinals were awesome. Those were some of the best quarterfinals I've seen in a long time. And then also like the eight teams that went through, like, and no offense to the teams that didn't go through, but like all the big teams went through. Like there's no big teams that played in this competition that are like out now. Like it's all of the heavy hitters. You know, I think these are the best eight teams in Europe that qualified for the Champions League, of course, left in the tournament. I think it's awesome. I've not seen the draw yet, so you're going to actually surprise me here when we go through. I've only seen the City draw. But yeah, I thought the quarterfinals definitely lived up to the hype that they got.
Yeah, most certainly. And it was awesome to see that the games were competitive. I mean, barring maybe something that we're going to talk about here shortly. But yeah, it was competitive. Everybody was in. Like you said, the big ones went through. Yeah, I think maybe an argument can be made that Inter could have done better in the second leg. But at the end of the day, Atletico deserved it. And yeah, I don't think that it was washed by any means. Everyone likes to make a story on Twitter X, don't they? So yeah, no, it was good. And moving forward, I anticipate it to kind of continue that way. And what we're going to do here and now is take you all through the ties. In those eight teams who will move on to the quarterfinals in this prestigious competition. Bayern Munich left it all to the second leg, but they did not disappoint. After being down 1-0 on aggregate after the first leg, Bayern get a convincing 3-0 victory in the second leg at home, which sees them through to the quarters. Bayern win by an aggregate score of 3-1. Gee, Bayern were less than impressive in the first leg, but they really showed their stuff in the second leg to move on.
Yeah, we kind of called them out for it, said they needed to, you know, change something, you know, actually, you know, play like they wanted to win in the second leg. And they came out playing really hard, looking like they wanted to win. And in the end, were pretty comfortable over Napoli.
I would say so. And I actually thought that Napoli might do the business in the second leg, but Bayern completely showed up on their home turf and rightly deserved to go through. PSG rolled to the quarterfinals of this competition after defeating Real Sociedad by an aggregate score of 4-1. Gaetano, it was Kylian Mbappe who scored three of PSG's four goals in this tie. First, just how good was he? And second, what did you make of PSG over these two legs? Because we said that most of the games were competitive, but maybe this tie was one of the ones that kind of faltered in terms of competitiveness overall.
Yeah, I thought Mbappe looked great. I think Sociedad also kind of did him a favor by playing a stupidly high line for most of the tie, which, I mean, you know, that's the thing, right? If this works and they win, we talk about how, you know, genius it was tactically, but it obviously backfired for them. So yeah, he looked fantastic. You know, it's just not disappointing, but you kind of knew that was going to happen, that PSG were going to end up going through. They're still going to choke in the quarterfinal here, depending on who they play. I don't even know yet, but I just know they're going to choke anyways. But yeah, I thought it was a good effort from Sociedad. A little naive tactically, but you know, I think this is the first time they've been kind of this far in the competition in a long time. So it was a good experience for them. If they get here, you know, in the next couple of years, they'll kind of maybe know not to be that, stupid, yeah. For lack of a better term.
Yeah, be a little bit more resolute defensively and maybe take a page out of Atletico's book.
Yeah.
Real Madrid didn't have it easy against RB Leipzig in their two-legged fixture. After Madrid had snuck a 1-0 victory in the first leg, a 1-1 draw would be the result in the second leg. Madrid, in the end, do enough to go through. G, your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I thought Madrid looked very good, but I also thought Leipzig looked incredible. To kind of push Real Madrid to that limit, it's not an easy thing to do. Like, they are one of the best teams in Europe, have been for a long time. And RB Leipzig kind of get written off pretty often as just, you know, kind of a mid-table Bundesliga team. I don't believe that, but that's just kind of, you know, the general consensus around them. So I thought they did themselves really proud. You know, nothing to hang their head in shame about going out like that. I thought they played amazing. But yeah, ultimately Real Madrid, just that little bit more quality to go through.
Yeah, and year in, year out, you know, at least one thing that you're getting from RB Leipzig is pure competitiveness, that domestically in European competitions, whatever the case might be, they're going to be competitive. And that's something that I love about that team. Manchester City made relatively light work of Copenhagen. City breezed their way to 3-1 victories in both legs and as a result win the tie by a score of 6-2 on aggregate. The champions pushed themselves on comfortably to the quarterfinals. G, it was your Manchester City that looked dominant in this tie. Break it down for us.
Yeah, it was just I don't want to say nice and easy, you know, as a disrespect to Copenhagen. Because obviously, you know, they did pretty well to get out of their group, beat some good teams in their group, beat a couple of shitty teams in their group, United. But yeah, no, I thought, comfortable. City looked really good. I'm kind of hoping that we use this as a, you know, kind of the first steps of kind of getting the ball rolling for this last stretch here. You know, big dominant win. Everyone looked good. I don't think too many injury concerns from it, which is kind of the icing on the cake. And yeah, into the quarterfinals, should be a good one.
Yeah, and I can't speak for you, obviously, because you're a Manchester City fan. You watch them a lot more closely than I do. But Pep was able to get some players in the mix and maybe not have players on for the full 90 minutes. So That's a rotation. I mean, anytime you could save minutes in the legs, that bodes well down the stretch, as you know, being a City fan, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so it was huge. Yet saw a couple of the younger players from the academy get some minutes, too, which is also, like, amazing. It's kind of that's the, like, the win-win of that is, you know, a guy like Erling Haaland doesn't have to play a full 90 and you can get an academy kid, you know, 15, 20, 25 minutes in the Champions League. Like, it's just perfect.
It is. Arsenal and Porto left it until the bitter end, needing penalties to decide things at the Emirates. After both teams won their respective home games by a score of 1-0, it remained level on aggregate and penalties would have to be the difference maker in the second leg. It was in fact Arsenal who came through on kicks from the spot, defeating Porto by a score of 4-2. Gaetano, more than a few heart and mouth moments for me at least, but what a victory for the Gunners, getting through to the quarterfinals for the first time since 2010, which they also incidentally beat Porto 14 years ago to get through that time as well. Your thoughts here, G?
So I just want to start with Porto quick, because Pepe at 41,
wild.
What a performance. Like, that is... Like, wow. I didn't realize he was that old. Like, I knew he was up there, but like when they were like, oh yeah, he's 41, I was like he looked like, if he was like, if you didn't know who that was, if you saw the highlights and they had like the name bar like blacked out, you'd be like, oh, like that guy's probably gonna get like a big money move in the summer for a performance like that. Like, he was incredible. But Arsenal, you know, ultimately having that little bit more quality to go through, needing penalties is a little you know, it's not great. But
I thought that their second goal should have stood. I thought it was a bit soft, but I mean,
yeah,
in the end, I mean, you got to do what you got to do to win, right?
Exactly. That was the first time we've seen penalties since the final in 2016, I believe it was, in the Champions League. So that was very fun to watch as a neutral. That was, you know, but that's I'm more interested to hear how you like feel about this, because that's like, that's a tough tie. Like, that was not maybe as easy as you, not that you thought it would be easy, but harder than you thought it would be, right?
It was harder than I thought it would be, for sure. But this whole sort of rhetoric of, oh, they've broken the curse, I don't really believe that. And I'll put this to a hockey reference, which you'll definitely appreciate. I love hockey too. I played it growing up in the whole bit. But last year when the Leafs got past the first round, everyone said that the curse was broken, but they were celebrating like they had won the Stanley Cup. I thought to myself, and I said it to many people, I said, there's no curse that's broken. I said, if you're supposed to do this, you're supposed to win. Now, you win by any means necessary, obviously, especially when it's do or die. But you have to understand that the next thing is to come. So was I happy that it went to penalties? No, because I didn't need to watch an extra hour of football that put stress on me. But at the end of the day, if it took penalties, well, I would have taken that. It was what it was. This tie, I would say it was competitive, but it wasn't like very good in terms of quality, if that makes sense.
Very like, scrappy.
Yeah, like I thought Porto actually did a great job tactically, and we had a very difficult time breaking them down, then register a shot in the first leg. Second leg had a couple of chances, but never really tested them too much. So again, sometimes in football, you have to do what you have to do to get over the line. But what I will say is probably the most relieved man in the Arsenal setup, not Mikel Arteta, not the board, not ownership, not anybody, Gabriel Martinelli. Reason why, in that first leg, he was the one who gave the ball away last kick of the game instead of just clearing his lines, and then Porto end up scoring. And I think your team actually, in men's, does a great job. You're up 2-1 late in the game or whatever, your level, you don't get greedy, you just clear your lines. You know, you kick the ball into Rose Ed, into the car park, whatever you need to do. He didn't do that. Porto score, and then Arsenal have to come back in the second leg, and Martinelli didn't even play because he was injured. So he's got to be the most man there. I'm just delighted that we're through to the quarters now, because it's been a long time coming for me personally. And yeah, I'm just glad that we're back in it. But yeah, it was one of those ties where, you know, Arsenal weren't great, Porto were okay, but I think probably the right team deserved to go through. Would you say?
Yeah, I would think so. Over the course of what would it have been? Oh, because it wasn't 180 minutes. It was what, 210 minutes?
Right.
Yeah, so I would say over 210 minutes on penalties. Yeah, I definitely think Arsenal, not by a ton, right, you know, but definitely probably deserve to go through.
Yeah, and on the penalties too, all four of their penalty takers incredibly calm. And then Raya, unbelievable with those two saves. Could have made a third save too. So yeah, they were great in the penalties. Barcelona did the job at their home ground, winning the second leg by a score of 3-1 over Napoli, after their first leg ended in a 1-1 draw. As a result, Barcelona move on to the quarterfinals, winning on an aggregate score of 4-2. Barcelona is seemingly turning things up in the second half of the season to end things here. And if you could just speak to their performance in this tie.
Yeah, I thought they looked all right. Nothing. I don't think they looked, you know, phenomenal. I think the scoreline might have flattered them a little bit. But yeah, I thought they looked pretty good. I definitely think playing at home the second leg was a huge boost for them. I don't think they would have, you know, got that type of performance playing away from home. But I mean, that's just the way the tournament goes, right? Yes. I don't think they have enough to go through. I still think they're still just a little too patchy. You know, it takes maybe, you know, one player gets injured out of that lineup, and then they kind of fall apart a little bit. But I mean, it feels like, you know, like nature's healing, seeing Barcelona progressing in the Champions League, you know, after a few years of not playing any European football or being in the Europa League. So it is nice to see them back here.
I totally agree. Some teams, you just want to have them in there just because of the name, if you will. And maybe an omission on our part, I can't exactly remember, but we might have said that Bayern actually played Napoli. They played Lazio.
Did we?
Yeah, we may have, or I might even be wrong. it was Barcelona who played Napoli and Bayern who played against Lazio. But regardless, Barcelona go through, and as we talked about earlier, Bayern go through, and both teams rightly so. Dortmund did the business against PSV after they went into the second leg level on aggregate by a score of 1-1. An early Jadon Sancho goal coupled with a late Marco Reus goal would be more than enough to see Dortmund over the line and through to the quarters of this competition. Dortmund defeat PSV by a score of 3-1 on aggregate. Gee, Dortmund edged PSV in the end. What can you say for this tie?
Yeah, I think this is one of the ties I was most excited to see because I had no idea what was going to happen with it. And I was so happy with it. It was exactly what I kind of wanted from these two teams. Just a lot of like end-to-end football, both teams really like going for it. I thought the Marco Reus goal was beautiful. Just great stuff all around. I would say probably the best 180 minutes of football in the round of 16.
Definitely. And Jadon Sancho's got to be loving life. Eh? Won the pair of the match and the whole thing. Second leg and the whole bit. Like, what a turnaround. You leave United and you go back to somewhere you're really comfortable and, like you said, where you're adored. And he puts that performance on. Incredible from him, eh?
Yeah, and I mean, it just goes to show like just how awful things at United are, that like he, you know, because he, like, let's not sugarcoat it, he was awful at United. He was not good. And then within what, a couple weeks of leaving, he's putting in man and match performance in the Champions League. Like,
yeah,
it's not surprising considering kind of how awful United have been for the last decade plus, but just like really like shocking to see it like that quickly, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and the demeanor of the player too, right?
Yeah.
Going to United, where your head is just completely sunk, where at Dortmund, he just looks full of life, actually looks his age, and, you know, like loving life and loving his football. So Dortmund deserved to go through, and in some part, at least, I won't say in large parts, it was a team performance, but in some part, thanks to Jadon Sancho. And Atletico Madrid and Inter entertained us from a tactical perspective, as we knew that it would. After Inter won the first leg by a score of 1-0, Atletico Madrid bounced back in the second leg, gaining a 2-1 advantage in the game and bringing the aggregate score level at 2-2. It would require penalties in the end, and it was Atletico Madrid who were marginally better from the spot as the Spanish side go through to the quarterfinals of the Champions League, defeating the Italian leaders 3-2 on penalties. Gee, Atletico found a way to make it happen, and they actually could have won it closer with there's about a minute left in the second period of the extra time. But regardless, they got it done. The floor is yours.
I would have bet everything that I own that Lautaro Martinez doesn't miss a penalty. And I cannot believe that he was the one that missed, like, losing penalty, I guess, for Inter. That to me is the most like shocking thing, considering the form he's been in this year. I think he's at like 30 goals all competitions. Like, just it feels like everything he's touched has ended up in the back of the net. I was shocked to see him miss that penalty. Not at all shocked to see this tie go to penalties. We talked about how it was going to be, you know, a defensive masterclass. 2-2 is actually, you know, way more than both of us expected. But yeah, I think it's tough to say a team like Inter were the, you know, don't deserve to go through, you know, especially considering their domestic form. But Atletico really, really impressed me that second leg. We said they were going to have to go for it. They needed to at least get that one goal to go and get two, you know, forced penalty shootout. And then the way they played in the extra time period as well was really impressive. I was, I thought they were just incredible.
Yeah, and I think Atletico need to be admired and sort of applauded because, yeah, they play a low block, basically two banks of five, and they just sit super compact. They don't allow you to go between them, these sorts of things, and they look to hit you on the break. But you saw in that second leg that, yeah, they kind of played the same way, but they just brought everything higher. And then in certain moments in their own half, especially, or in the middle third, they were a lot more aggressive, and, you know, it went really well for them. So credit to them, because as we said, it would be a defensive masterclass of sorts. And I think both managers probably got things right tactically, but penalties in the end, best way to win it, toughest way to lose it, right? Like, I didn't expect for Martinez to sky that one into Rosette either. That was, yeah, really sad. Actually, I felt bad for him.
And it's not like the keeper saved it, because the keeper saves it, like, fair enough. Like, you can never argue about it, but like when you like miss the net completely, like, that's just unreal.
It is. And regardless, it is the quarterfinals now that we look to, and to review our picks in the round of 16. We both went 4-for-8, Gaetano. Maybe our worst set of picks in the history. We usually do quite well. We usually are around that 75% mark of getting things right, if not better. But regardless, we do have the likes of Manchester City, Real Madrid, PSG, Bayern, Dortmund, Atletico Madrid, Arsenal, and Barcelona, who will be in the quarterfinals of this prestigious competition. And the draw for the quarterfinals will consist of the following: PSG versus Barcelona. Well, that's the first one. We're not really reviewing these on our show, but just your initial thoughts.
That's a banger. That's fireworks. That's an early chance for Mbappe to dunk on Barcelona before he goes to Madrid. Like, that's huge.
It's a big deal. That storyline's written all over the place. Looking forward to going over that one in our next show. The next tie is Atletico Madrid versus Dortmund. So, but a Dortmund team that really look to play on the front foot. You got Atletico Madrid, who's going to be looking to play, again, that deep, low, compact block. What do you think there?
That's going to be interesting. That's going to be fun. I think that, like, that's my early shout for, like, tie to watch. But also, does that mean what I think it means for you?
Arsenal versus Bayern Munich. So I've got a lot of bad memories here, but if there's one word that pops to mind for me, revenge. It's time for revenge. And I'll never forget when the owner said this. The reason why we're moving to the Emirates is for Champions League night, so that way we can go up and beat the likes of teams like Bayern Munich. Now it's time to put our money where our mouth is. We've done what we had to do. We've suffered long enough. We're back in the competition. I think it was Muller who came out and said, oh, we've got Arsenal in the quarterfinals. Like, we had to have somebody. We get Bayern Munich. Let's have it. I'm looking forward to this one. I'm sure you are too.
Yeah, that should be super fun. It's weird because it's not going to be like the Arsenal Bayern Munich that like we remember. Because yeah. I remember those. Yeah, yeah. You know, those were not ideal nights for you guys, eh?
No, not really. I remember the days of, you know, being in university class. I probably shouldn't be saying this, but, you know, listening to the professor, taking my notes, whatever, and then having my laptop open with it on. It's just like, oh, another goal against. Oh, another goal against. Oh, we're 10-2. Great. Let's go home. I don't want to see that. I don't think it's going to be that, but Arsenal, and I'm sure Mikel Arteta will have the guys prepared, but they need to be switched on to this contest over two legs like never before. And in my opinion, it is time for revenge. And then, as you know, the last tie is going to be contested between Real Madrid and your Manchester City. So what do you think about that one?
I mean, it's a small sample size, but the last two winners of this tie have went on to win the competition. Yep. And rightfully so. I think City and Madrid are two of the best teams left in this competition in Europe as a whole. I'm confident that City can do it. We've done it before, but at the same time, it's Real Madrid in the Champions League, and that's just never easy. There could be literally 2 minutes left on the clock and you're up on aggregate and it's still not over. It should be fun. I'm gonna use fun in quotations because it's not gonna be fun to watch. It'll be fun to enjoy the spectacle of. But yeah, that's. I mean, if you're like you said, if you're gonna play him, like, bring him on, right?
Yeah, 100%. You gotta have it. You have to have it. And obviously, that's gonna be the one that you're gonna be looking at the most because you're a City fan, of course. But out of the other three ties, what's the one that you're looking at, thinking I've got to try? I know we work during the time that the games are on, so it's difficult to catch the entire game. But what's the one that you're looking forward to the most, apart from the City tie?
Like, all of them are really good for very different reasons. I think kind of the headlines and kind of the showmanship of the PSG-Barcelona one is going to be fun to watch. Yep. I think the actual football of Dortmund and Atletico is going to be super fun because their styles contrast just so much. It's going to be interesting to see if Arsenal can take this, you know, this next step in Europe and kind of, you know, I don't want to demean them, but like play with the big boys because Bayern Munich are, you know, one of the biggest teams in the world.
Yep.
So I think they're all super interesting for like totally different reasons. If I had to pick one that, you know, the boss was like, hey, you can sit for 90 minutes and watch this game, I think just for the what I expect tactically, I think it would have to be Dortmund and Atletico.
Yeah, I think that's a fair pick. Obviously, I'm looking forward to Arsenal and Bayern the most, being an Arsenal fan, but I'm actually looking forward to the Manchester City Real Madrid tie the most, just because I want to see. Said two Champions League, those are both of the winners. Real Madrid now have taken that next step in La Liga. Manchester City challenging on all fronts for Premier League, Champions League, FA Cup. I'm looking forward to seeing those two giants go at it. I would say PSG Barcelona, but it's also one of those ties that if PSG goes through, I won't be terribly surprised because I can anticipate Barcelona playing bad. But then if Barcelona go through, that means that PSG choked and they're out, so I wouldn't be surprised either. And then in the case of Atletico Madrid and Dortmund, I think, again, you're going to see a very good tactical battle. But I'm actually just looking more forward to the second leg of that tie than I am the first of that.
So, 100%.
I'm going Manchester City and Real Madrid. That tie is the one that I'm looking forward to the most, apart from Arsenal and Bayern. It's only just begun, but the MLS season has kicked off in a pretty entertaining way. Gee, how have you enjoyed the start of the season so far?
It's been phenomenal because Toronto don't suck yet. We've actually played three like very good games of football, which we've really not seen in a very, very long time. And then outside in the rest of the league, yeah, there's been some awesome results. Inter Miami already kind of, you know, leading the pack out front. A couple of teams that I thought would be, you know, a lot better. You know, obviously we're talking like 2-3 games into the season here. It's nothing crazy, but Seattle kind of having a little bit of a rough start, which I will always love to see. Yeah, for like the first like 2-3 match weeks, I think it's been really, really good.
Yeah, I've quite enjoyed it too. And again, we say it time and time again on our show. I love the fact that, and we're recording on a Friday here, I love the fact that you could have Friday and Saturday night football on you know, your TV. So like you can go out for a bite to eat or a drink with friends, whatever, and you can watch MLS soccer. You can just kind of have a night in. You can watch MLS soccer, because all the time that we watch from a European perspective here in Canada, we watch morning games and early afternoon games. So it's awesome that we can be able to see the spectacle in our own backyard at reasonable hours, at reasonable days of the week. So taking a look at the table just to get things rolling here at the beginning of the season. In the East, we've got 5 teams who are all on 7 points to kickstart the season. Those teams are Inter Miami, Montreal, Columbus, New York Red Bulls, and our beloved Toronto FC. There are also 4 teams in the East who have yet to suffer a defeat in their opening 3 games of the season. Gee, it's early doors, obviously, but can we expect this side of the MLS, that being the East, to be consistently as competitive as it's been to start the season?
I definitely think the top couple teams, like, I think Columbus will be up there kind of the whole season. I think Inter Miami is going to be up there, you know, the whole season. I would love to see Toronto up there for the full season. But even then, even if we just play 500 soccer, I'm totally happy with that. I would love to see Montreal fall out of that, because, you know, Montreal. I can't say on the podcast, but you know exactly what I mean. So yeah, I expect like definitely those top couple teams in the East. I think just kind of quality wise and their whole squad are kind of a step above everyone else in the East. I expect them to kind of be the pack leaders throughout most of the year.
Yeah, and I personally don't think that it's going to consistently be as competitive as it's been to start the season. I mean, we typically see some teams start hot and then they begin to fall away a little bit. But yeah, like you said, Inter Miami, Columbus, maybe even New York staying in that conversation. But we said it so many times too, the name of the game this season for Toronto FC is improvement. And I do believe just based on these first 3 games that improvement is something that they will attain. And out in the West, it's Portland and Minnesota who are joint top with 7 points each. In addition to those 2 teams, there are another 4 teams who remain undefeated thus far in the West. Gee, I've got to say, I've watched a couple of games in the Western Conference so far. My favorite being the Vancouver and Charlotte game a couple of Saturdays ago. Again, it was one of those nights where I went out for a bite to eat and a drink with a friend and got to watch the game. It was great. And it was a good bit of entertainment just because it was just pure end-to-end action. Like, you could have, you know, landed a plane in the middle of the park. That's how open it was. Incredible. But what are you seeing in the early stages of the season out there in the West?
It's funny because the West is usually a little harder. It's a little more of a, like a grind, a little more, I'm trying to think of like the right word to describe it. But it's usually not this, that like tactically open. The West is very much, you know, a slugfest.
Yeah.
You know, especially the teams like, you know, the Seattle Sounders who have kind of dominated the West for the last, you know, 5-6 years, kind of being like the, you know, the mantelpiece of how you play in the Western Conference. So it's interesting to see that it's kind of shifted a little bit this year. And I'm like LA Galaxy, you know, it's nice to see them kind of holding their own a little bit. They've looked a little shaky. I do expect them to be up there as well. With, I think LAFC is going to kind of turn it around. They had a not great start, but just their roster is too good to not be like at the top, but you know, come the end of the year. But yeah, I think it's going to be, it'll be interesting to see if this kind of tactical shift holds throughout the year, or if this is maybe just an early season, you know, bubble that's going to burst.
Most certainly. And as always, here on Full Time, you can get your regular MLS fix and updates. This is Daniel Scarpino and Gaetano Gallo, and you're listening to Full Time on the Game Sports Podcast and 91 Network. A reminder that Full Time is sponsored by Little Caesars Pizza. You can download and access the Pizza Portal app for any of the 2 locations in Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario. Have a delicious hot and ready pizza from Little Caesars today. The FA Cup quarterfinals are nearly set and ready to go. Gaetano, we have got some tasty matchups, and we are going to be looking into those here and now alongside our predictions for each. First, it's a fun one where Wolves will play host to championship side Coventry. Gee, both teams are really pushing on domestically and have obviously pushed on in this competition. But who do you think might go through here?
This is probably the toughest one to call for me because I can totally see Wolves blowing it. You know, they've not been very consistent all year. And the last couple seasons, they've kind of been not great. Have been known to kind of implode a little bit. And I just have that sinking gut feeling that like this might be the implosion. But at the same time, like they're a Premier League team and they should have enough quality to see through Coventry. So it's like a real, this is like a 59 or 49-51 for me. I'm going to go Coventry. I think they're going to squeak it out. And even if not, then it's just, you know, fun for the prediction. So it's not, you know, not just the big team every time.
Fair enough. And I think actually Coventry right now, based on how they're pushing in the championship table, they're looking at being in a playoff spot come the end of the season and not top two, but they're definitely in the conversation for being in the top six, which would qualify them for a playoff spot at Wembley. So they could be in the Premier League next season, potentially. I'm going to say, just based on the recent run of form for the most part, and some of the things that they've been producing on field and some of the wins they've been getting, I'm going to go Wolves just because I think that that confidence is there. And if you wanted to pick sort of one team to play against out of the seven that you had available to you, you probably would pick Coventry. So I'm going to go Wolves. And I don't think it's going to be an easy one, though. I think it's going to be very close, but I will say Wolves. Next, it's your Manchester City, Gaetano, who will welcome Newcastle to the Etihad. City are the champions of this competition after their unprecedented treble-winning season last year and will look to win this trophy for a second consecutive season. Gee, they will have to go past Newcastle in order to give themselves the opportunity to do this. Please give us your prediction, of course, and the breakdown of how you think that this game is going to go.
So, obviously, I think City are going to win. You know, I don't think that needs to be explained too much. But I definitely don't think it's going to be easy for City. Newcastle are, you know, one of the better teams in the Premier League. Squad depth for them is actually like starting to look really, really good. That midfield is like outside of kind of like the top teams in Europe. Like Joelinton and Bruno Guimaraes are absolutely like they are two of my favorite players in the league. I kind of wish they played for City because like they're just phenomenal. This is not going to be an easy. They're not going to be a pushover. I do think City are going to probably win it, not comfortably, but just, you know, with enough comfort that it's not, you know, a last minute Erling Haaland goal, you know, last kick of the game type getting through. But yeah, it's not going to be easy, but City are going to go through.
Yeah. And the fact that this game is played at home for your City. Huge. Yeah, that's a big deal because when I looked at it, I thought, okay, maybe Newcastle, they're not having the same season that they did last year, but maybe Newcastle. I thought, yeah, at the Etihad, I can't see it. If this was played at their ground, I think that I probably would have predicted Newcastle, just again, one for the fun of it, but two, possibly because it could have happened. But I'm with you. I'm also going Manchester City, and I think that it's going to be a two-goal margin by the end of it. Chelsea will play host to championship side Leicester. Leicester were only relegated from the Premier League last season and are doing a fine job this season in the championship, whereas Chelsea are having a rough go this season, as we know, in the Premier League. That being said, the competition that we are referring to here puts league play aside, and it will be all down to the battle on the pitch at Stamford Bridge. Gaetano, who's going through to the semifinals here?
I'm going to take Leicester for this one. I think, you know, we've seen this squad. Obviously, it's changed since last time they were kind of this far in the FA Cup, but we've seen like kind of the core of this team be able to rise to these moments. If you beat Chelsea in the final that they did win, I think they're going to see them rise this moment. I think Chelsea are going to falter a little bit. I think they're going to be like, they haven't been consistent at all this season. And I think it's going to come back to bite them in the ass here.
I think that that is definitely a fair show. And I can see that happening. I really can. But again, just the fact that Chelsea are playing this one at home, it almost seems like, and maybe I'm like wrong for thinking this, but it's like, how could Chelsea not have something from this season? Because like Premier League's gone, lost the Carabao Cup, they had, you know, no European football. I almost feel in my heart like Chelsea have to get something. So I don't know why I feel that, but I think that they're going to beat Leicester. I think it's going to be a narrow one. They're going to have to squeak it. I don't think that they're going to play great, but I think somebody's going to step up, whether it's Gallagher or Raheem Sterling or Palmer or somebody, and they're going to put one in the back of the net, and it'll be a key difference maker. So I'm going to go Chelsea on this one, but almost a little bit reluctantly. And lastly, it will be Manchester United going up against Liverpool in a clash between two historic clubs in English football. Gaetano, for me, I am most excited for this tie. Obviously, you have your City tie to look forward to, but me not having a horse in the race is the one that I'm looking at. But regardless of collective or individual excitement, there will only be one winner in this game. In your opinion, who will it be and why?
Well, first of all, I wish both teams could lose because this is just no fun for me either way. I think, you know, leaving bias aside, I think just based on like footballing in 90 minutes, well, hopefully just 90 minutes, Liverpool should win this. They're just significantly better than United. But I also don't want them to win it because I don't want them to have that confidence. But at the same time, if they're going to win it, I would love to see them just batter United, like put five or six past them, just like leave them right in the mud. That would be ideal.
It would be ideal. And, you know, I looked at it from a Europa League perspective, actually, believe it or not. And I thought to myself, you know what? Liverpool have been able to rest a lot of players because they crushed their tie. They won like 10-2 on aggregate or something like that, 8-1 or other. And I thought to myself, okay, they're going to be fresh going into this game at the weekend. But something keeps gnawing at me, and I don't know why, and it's probably really stupid of me, but I'm actually going to go United. And I don't know why that is. Maybe it's just because I can't see Pep and Klopp playing each other another time, because it felt like the last time they played each other, that was like the send off. So yeah, I don't know what's telling me that United's going to win. It might be a stupid prediction, but I'm going to go with United there. And like you said, it'd be great if both teams could just lose and just get the competition. Somebody does have to win. So you'll take Liverpool, I'll take United. Just to review our picks here, G, you're going Coventry, Man City, Leicester, and Liverpool. And I've pretty much got the opposite, barring the City game there. I've got Wolves, Man City, Chelsea, and United. So a reminder to our listeners that the quarterfinals of the FA Cup go this Saturday and Sunday, March 16th and 17th. Wolves and Coventry will play at 8:15 a.m. Eastern time on Saturday, so tomorrow. Manchester City and Newcastle will play at 1:30 p.m. Eastern time on Saturday. Chelsea and Leicester kick off at 8:45 a.m. Eastern time on Sunday the 17th. And Manchester United and Liverpool play at 11:30 a.m. Eastern time on Sunday as well. All of these games can be watched on your local television sports network. So on our next episode of Full Time, we'll be able to review these games and let you know who won and who's advancing to the semifinals at Wembley. A summer of fun, entertainment, and enjoyable weather is upon us, and so is Euro 2024. That means the beautiful game being played at the absolute highest level in the world of soccer. Gee, exciting times ahead, aren't there?
Yeah, it's weird that the Euros are already like around the corner, just considering the last one was postponed, so it was a year later. So it just feels like that gap between them has been very short, but I'm very excited to see, you know, hopefully Italy defend their crown. Hopefully. But even if not, you know, Euros, it's not like the World Cup. It feels like the Euros are just like super unpredictable. Like there's always something like super crazy that happens. The World Cup typically isn't like that. Obviously the last one was with Morocco going through the semis, but like the Euros always, just, there's always something random, like Greece winning it. Like there's always just something. I'm just really excited to, you know, to see what that something is going to be this time around.
Yeah, and you know that there's going to be a something at somewhere along the line. So definitely exciting times ahead. And I mean, you've listened to previous players talk who've played multiple World Cups, multiple Euros, and some of them do say it's harder to win a Euro than it is to win a World Cup, believe it or not. And to me, that's you'd almost think it's unthinkable. But if you look at the competition itself in Europe, some of the best teams in the world are in there, right?
Yeah, I definitely think, you know, and I'm gonna, you know, make a joke about Canada here, but like you can draw Canada in your World Cup group, and like that's not the hardest thing to do. But you look at like even the, you know, the in quotations worst teams in Europe are still really good teams and can cause a lot of problems. So yeah, I think just the level of quality is just significantly higher just in Europe alone compared to, you know, the entire world.
Yeah, and I mean, if you take a look at last Euro, and I'm pretty sure my memory serves me correct, nobody really had Denmark on their radar. And then for the semi, I think.
Yeah, like that, and that's exactly what I mean. Like they took out some big teams along the way. Like it's you know, it's just so unpredictable. You know, like I said, the quality is just so high throughout the whole competition. Definitely, I would say my favorite, not World Cup, like international competition for sure.
Well, me as well. And we are nearly prepared for Euro 2024. However, there are still three spots up for grabs in the tournament. And those spots are about to be determined between March 21st and March 26th. 12 teams remain in contention to qualify for the competition, but only three will get it. Of the eligible teams remaining, in Path A, we have Poland, Wales, Finland, and Estonia. In Path B, it's Israel, Bosnia and Herzegovina, Ukraine, and Iceland. In Path C, it's Georgia, Greece, Kazakhstan, and Luxembourg. Gee, just looking at these paths, who stands out to you of all of these teams, and what do you make of these groups?
I think the two standouts for me are Bosnia-Herzegovina and Poland. Mostly, I think they have the most individual firepower out of any of those teams. Obviously, Poland's got Robert Lewandowski, one of the best forwards in the world. And although he's a lot older, Bosnia still's got Edin Dzeko, and he's one of my favorite players of all time. And he, you know, even in his, you know, late 30s, is still scoring for fun, both domestically and for countries. So yeah, I think those two stand out the most for me in terms of, you know, having, you know, in quotations, legitimate star players playing for them. But even then, like, teams like Ukraine are very, like, well-rounded. A team like Finland, very well-rounded. Wales, very well-rounded. Like, there's some very good teams left in this in the qualifiers here.
Yeah, and, you know, for me, I also am with you with Poland. And I would just like to see Greece back in one of these competitions, because it almost feels like they're constantly missing from these competitions, right? So I would love to see them back in it. But, again, only three teams are going to go through. So to kind of have a look at these games to see which three teams will go through and complete the bracket at Euro 2024, it's Georgia who will play Luxembourg, Greece will play Kazakhstan, Wales take on Finland, Poland match up against Estonia, Bosnia and Herzegovina will play Ukraine, and Israel will play against Iceland. G, who do you see in each path making the finals? Again, cut some decent variety here.
So I think Bosnia and Herzegovina are going to go through. I think they will probably end up beating Ukraine, and then they play the winner of Iceland and Israel. I think they just have more quality than either of those three teams and should go through there. I'm going to take Georgia to go through. I'm not going to be able to pronounce the winger from Napoli. That one. I can't pronounce that. But I think he's going to be the difference for them. I think when I look at Luxembourg, Greece, and Kazakhstan, they don't have a player of that quality, anywhere near that quality, if we're going to be, you know, realistic here. So I think that difference in quality is going to be huge there. And I'm going to take Finland to upset Poland. I think, I don't know, just weird gut feeling. The Finns are always very good. They've got decent goaltending in Hrdecki. Yeah, I'm going to take Finland.
Love it. And, you know, these sort of playoff qualifiers, obviously we don't have to worry about it this year because Italy are in the competition, but they always give me nightmares because I think Sweden, North Macedonia, like, weird things can happen in these playoff qualifiers, man, like very, very, very weird. So the fact that you said, like, Finland, for example, like, that doesn't surprise me. Anything can happen. And, for me and Path A, I'm going to say that Wales and Poland are going to be there. Those are the two teams that I've picked. In Path B, I'm going to go Ukraine and Israel, believe it or not. I think, again, upsets could be on the cards. And an upset has to happen somewhere. I don't know where, but I'm going to go more so there. And in Path C, I'm going to go Georgia and Greece, I think. So you've also said Georgia, but I'm going to say that Greece is going to be there. Possibly in with a shout. So those are the teams that I'm going to say that are going to play in the finals. As to who wins, I'm probably going to have to say that Poland are going to go through in that first path. I'm going to give it Ukraine. I'm going to give it Ukraine to go through in that next path. And then I'm going to say that Georgia go through in the other one. So Poland, Ukraine, and Georgia will be my picks You say Bosnia and Herzegovina, Georgia, and Finland. So we're the same, actually, in terms of Georgia, but two other picks that are a bit different. So a reminder that these semifinals will all be played on Thursday, March 21st, and the finals are going to be the following Tuesday, March 26th. And for our listeners in Canada and the United States, ways to watch these games are on DAZN, Fox Sports, Fubo TV, VIX, or TVA Sports. And in our next episode of Full Time, just like with the FA Cup, we'll be able to provide you with the last three teams who have qualified for Euro 2024, and thus will set us up for a summer of football. This is Daniel Scarpino and Gaetano Gallo, and you're listening to Full Time on the Game Sports Podcast and 91 Network. A reminder that Full Time is sponsored by Little Caesars Pizza. You can download and access the Pizza Portal app for any of the two locations in Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario. Have a delicious hot and ready pizza from Little Caesars today. Ladies and gentlemen, that is Full Time. As we wrap up today's show, we want to thank you sincerely for spending some time with us to talk about the beautiful game. G, we had a jam-packed show here today, but a great deal of fun. Well done, sir.
Yeah, no, thank you for having me. You know, I always joke like, oh, what a great way to wrap up our day. We normally record later, but like, this is a great way to start the day off. Like, this has been phenomenal. Like, we can only go up from here. This is a great start. Thank you for having me. And I look forward to talking to you next time.
Most definitely. And like you said, great way to start the day. It's a beautiful day outside and great way to go into the weekend. Great way to end my holiday personally. So a lot of great things happening. Love to see it. A reminder to our listeners that the next episode of Full Time will be recorded the week of March 25th, 2024. In that show, we will discuss Europe's Big Five, results from the FA Cup, and the results of the Euro 2024 playoff qualifiers. As always, we'll keep everyone in the loop with all of the happenings in the world of football. For weekly content, make sure to hit like, follow, and subscribe to all platforms of both the Game Sports Podcast and 91 Network on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Music, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and Podbean. For Gaetano Gallo, my name is Daniel Scarpino, and thank you for tuning in to Full Time. We look forward to seeing you at kickoff next time back here on the Game Sports Podcast and 91 Network. Best always.